that as of now has at least 5 dozen people in jail just for what they posted on the internet.
Now, how do they find these websites, basically?
Well, they've kind of gone about this with multiple tools, and that's the thing with these. You made a great analogy just a minute ago regarding Marxist being a socialist in a hurry with a gun. And the Chinese government, it really has tried to take some sort of a third way. Some people are even beginning to call them a fascist state. But they've really employed multiple techniques here. They've got, on the one hand, they've got a Ministry of Information. Sounds very Orwellian, doesn't it? this Ministry of Information is going through and really checking all the, on the content side. It has web crawlers going through and cataloging information, checking to see what kind of material that Chinese companies and citizens are posting, even on their blogs or home pages. So it's not just big companies or news agencies. And then they also control a lot of the internet service providers, the different gateways that people use to actually get onto the internet. So they've got censorship at that level. And then even more aggressive than that, they've also gone down to the access level where people go and access the internet, which in China is typically at internet cafes, since the vast majority of families there are not that well off, certainly not by U.S. standards. And they've actually closed down something in the neighborhood of 47,000 internet cafes in the last couple of years. And they've actually begun installing cameras in a lot of them so they could watch what people are viewing on the internet and see these people, and making people swipe their national ID cards before they can get online so they have a complete record of who was there and what they went to surf and read and so forth. So they're really kind of controlling both the content side and the consumer side when it comes to what people are accessing on the web.
Gee, this almost sounds like what people are accessing in their public libraries, but we know no freedom-loving country would do that either, would they?
Well, that's a sensitive topic there. But at least in this country, whatever libraries are doing notwithstanding, at least we have the ability to from our homes and in private life, use the internet in whatever fashion we want. And Certainly, one can debate the propriety of what libraries do in terms of blocking certain types of objectionable content, but I will say this, the Chinese have gone a good step further here, and they've elicited American companies such as Yahoo and Google, which provide search engines, to help them block a host of other objectionable content, including words such as democracy, religion, capitalism, Dalai Lama, Tibet, Taiwan. I mean, it's a long list of items there that we certainly wouldn't think are quite as objectionable, perhaps, as adult material or other types of content that gets filtered out here in the U.S.
Where does the argument stand, then, that modern technology is bringing China out? I mean, that's obviously the subject of raging debate. I don't know where you stand on it.
Well, I definitely tend to be...
Views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Good evening from Santa Cruz, California. This is the Freedom 21 radio program. And like our announcer said, if you have a comment or question, please call us 1-888-245-4237. And if you're near your computer, check it out at freedom21santacruz.net/radio, or for you very sophisticated ones, f21sc.net. And if you're near that computer, send an email to your friends. Let them know that we are forwarding freedom on this program, and this is your weekly place to gather and talk about some of the terrible things that are going on in this country and some of the positive things that are being done to combat it. We're very fortunate tonight to have one of our frontline soldiers with us. It's Tom DeWeese from the American Policy Center. Tom, you there?
I'm here, Roy.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
Feeling a little better than last week.
Yes, I am.
We were in Reno together a couple of weeks ago, and we were going to have you here last week, but you weren't feeling well, and I came away from that Reno conference. I'm so glad I went, because I was, scared and energized, and all kinds of emotions came from that. But I wanted to get your sense of how it all went.
I think that we are building something very, very unique in this country with Freedom 21. This conference, when we put it together, we wanted to do something different than had ever been done before. That conference was almost a seminar. I said that it was going to be building blocks to help people understand what sustainable development is, what the dangers are. A lot of conferences that deal on so-called, quote-unquote, property rights issues have usually a lot of speakers that talk on a variety of issues that may or may not be related and may or may not tell you all the details of what they're talking about. This time I wanted to bring it together to where everything built on the next thing. And I think we achieved that. It is so important that people who are working on individual issues, whether it be gun control or it be water issues in their community or housing restrictions or a wide variety of things, education issues, they've got to understand that all of these issues are interconnected. There is an agenda. We've talked about it over and over again, Agenda 21 that comes out of the United Nations. That agenda covers every aspect of our lives. And if you don't understand that, then when you're working on your single issue, and which I encourage you to do, but when you're working on it, you have to understand that it's interconnected to a lot of other issues. And that's what we set out to do with this conference, and we touched on it a little bit at last year's conference, and I think we did it in a big way this year. And now we're looking, we've already started talking about next year and how we can do it better and really help people not only understand, but learn how to fight back.
All right, we're going to take a quick break right here. We'll come back with Tom DeWeese. Welcome back. We're with Tom DeWeese from the American Policy Center. Tom, for those who might be happening on this program for the first time, give us a little bit of background on you, the American Policy Center, and your work.
The American Policy Center is this year celebrating its 19th year. When I started it back in 1986, my main concerns and beliefs were limited government, free enterprise, individual liberty, the basic foundations of the country. Those are the things I believe in, and I wanted to do something to promote those ideas. And when I founded American Policy Center, we took on some issues to do that. And the issues that we fight on today are national sovereignty, which puts us in our national independence, which puts us straight up against the United Nations, property rights, and that led to our understanding and learning about sustainable development, because that's the biggest threat to property rights in this country, and privacy rights. And we find this interconnected with the rest of it. We, you know, with the Patriot Act, with a lot of things going on in this country, we're losing our privacy and our individuality in a big way. We work on illegal immigration, which we think is a real threat to our national sovereignty. And, of course, education issues. We were one of the first organizations to start fighting programs like Goals 2000, School to Work, Workforce Development Act, all these things that were used to restructure our schools. And so those are issues that we work on to promote the ideas of individual liberty, free enterprise, and limited government.
How did you get together with Freedom 21?
Well, Freedom 21 itself, not Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, but the Freedom 21 campaign, American Policy Center was one of the four or five organizations that met to come up with a method or a way that we could combat the UN's Agenda 21, which is sustainable development. And we, about 6 years ago, we got together, 7 years ago, we got together in Washington, D.C., and put this idea together. And then we started putting the conference together, and slowly but steadily it has grown, growing in influence, growing in impact, and growing in promoting the message. So that's how we got started. We were just one of the original groups. I worked very closely all the time with Henry Lamb, and Freedom 21 was his brainchild. And I was lucky enough for him to call me into the organizing meeting, and so that's how we did it.
All right, we're going to take another quick break. Or if you have a question for Tom DeWeese, call 888-245-4237. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're talking to Tom DeWeese from the American Policy Center. Tom, since we left Reno, what are some of the things that you've been working on there at the American Policy Center?
Well, we're heavily embroiled in a battle over the Endangered Species Act. For some reason, Congressman Richard Pombo,
who's from here in California.
From California, he's been one of the people that we've always considered a friend and a major property rights advocate, has decided that this year, in Congress this year, that we have to reauthorize the Endangered Species Act. And he has put together a bill that we are really not happy about. They started telling us that we couldn't use the words repeal or reform anymore when we talked about the Endangered Species Act, because that would be a negative. We had to talk about update and strengthen. And we said, what? The one thing we do not want to do is update and strengthen the worst piece of legislation to come out of the Congress since the income tax. This has been devastating to property owners and to industries in this country. Because the Endangered Species Act is nothing but penalty. It doesn't do anything to help help endangered species, but what it does is penalize property owners who suddenly find an endangered species on their land. And so that's led to a lot of shrewd property owners who find an endangered species who use the practice of shoot, shovel, and shut up. And that doesn't help anything. It's because it's so punitive. And so what we've always asked for are property rights protections, and unfortunately this bill starts at the very beginning. You know, when you negotiate bills, things change. It starts at only protecting your or giving you compensation for your property if it's taken, if it's only over 50%. So you lose 50% of your property before anybody will even say, well, gee, we'll consider maybe paying you something for it. And that'll take years, and then you have to file lawsuits and so forth. It's no protection at all. And by the time this is negotiated by the other side, there won't be any property rights protection at all. Worst of all, this bill has language in it to bring into the Endangered Species Act invasive species language. Invasive species is far worse control of your land and the Endangered Species Act ever hope to be. Things like Kentucky bluegrass, which is used in most people's front yards on golf courses and so forth, is an endangered species. Your dog, your cattle in the fields, human beings are endangered, are invasive species under a very, very broad definition. In other words, the government can use this language to make it mean anything they want to mean, and it is far worse. I've said in several of our releases and so forth that if they get this invasive species language in the Endangered Species Act, you'll wish you had the old one back. It's horrible. And Congressman Pombo has introduced this bill and trying to shove it down our throats, and we stood up and said no. And that actually has put a major monkey wrench in the movement. He had had it on the fast track, and they pulled it. While we were in conference in Reno, they were supposed to introduce it the next Monday and didn't, and it's on hold. And we're waiting to see now what's going to happen with it, but we just hope it's dead on arrival. We've called it Kilo 2, and it is a major affront to property owners.
They assigned a number to that. Is there something for us to watch for on that one?
I'll be honest with you. I don't. No, it has not been assigned a number because he has not introduced it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we know you're on a lot of fronts. What are some of the other things you're working on?
The Codex issue. I'm not sure a lot of people know what that means. There was a meeting in Rome over the beginning of July. Codex is a part of the World Trade Organization where they make recommendations for regulations, particularly dealing with health issues. And these recommendations that they came out with on July 4th out of Rome for international regulations literally would mean that getting natural supplements like vitamin C would only be available through prescription. Your doctor would have to prescribe them. There's a whole list of these kind of natural supplements that they are putting into this. And even things like getting a massage, you would have to have a prescription to get a massage. Anything they could interpret to mean something that's therapeutic would come under this. It gives the FDA massive power to decide these things. And what's happened here, what's really behind this, is the American Medical Association and the big pharmaceutical companies are being hurt by a huge growth in natural medicine in this country. Homeopathic doctors, people using supplements, instead of all these pills that are manufactured that have massive side effects. You know, you watch these ads on television every night that tell you that it's going to cure this and cure that, but you know, three-quarters of the commercial are all the things that it'll do to you and side effects. Natural medicines are you know, we believe, much healthier for you. At least it's a choice for you to take that. And I think the key to the whole thing is that choice. You have international bureaucrats who are being empowered to make decisions, and you've got big pharmaceutical companies paying the bill to get this done so that they can put their competition out of business, the natural medicine industry. And this is what this is all about. It has absolutely nothing to do with protecting you and your health. But once again, as you know, we find in all the sustainable development policies, and this is one of them, that that you know, top-down control is making those decisions for you. And so this is something that people have got to be aware of, that there is a major move afoot to take away your right to choose how you take care of your body. And so that's a major issue that we're getting involved in.
And how can people keep up on that particular one? Because, you know, a lot of us like juice. A lot of us, you know, want to take our vitamins.
Yeah, and you know, in fact, I had an hour and a half long telephone conversation with some of the folks working on this today, trying to pinpoint exactly how we go about this. The biggest thing that people can do is call their congressman and tell them they are opposed to any kind of government control over the use of natural supplements. If you don't do this, you're going to lose your ability to have those things. And I mean, right down to orange juice may end up being something from a prescription. It's that crazy, and it could lead to that. We've got some articles that are starting to come out on it, and we're working on trying to put together a national petition campaign where people can get petitions and put them in their health food stores in places that are concerned about this, and then we can make some noise on Capitol Hill. But that's the key to it. We've got to make noise on Capitol Hill. We're not getting at the moment enough information out on this, and so we're working on doing it. There's some confusion because they had the meeting in Rome, and then the Chinese wanted much more stringent regulations, and so what they had on the table, they pulled it back to consider what the Chinese were asking for. That doesn't sound good for our side, but it did delay it for a little bit, but it's there, and it's going to come. And we're trying to get our handle on it so we know exactly what it is that they're doing. But suffice to say, in general, all natural supplements, all homeopathic medications, and if you go to a homeopathic doctor, as I do, then they well could be put out of business because of these regulations.
Yeah, you were just saying you had an hour and a half conversation with those people, when we were in Reno. I think, every two or three minutes, you were being approached by different groups of people. Tell us a bit about, like, what your week was like this week. Some of the other things you worked on, some of the other people that you've been talking to.
Well, those are some of the main things we've been working on, the ESA and the Codex issue. What I've spent the rest of the week doing is working on our Freedom21.com internet site. We talked about that in Reno. This is a new plan that we've brought together to try to raise money for our movement. It's got two points. One is to raise money. The other is to bring our people together on the internet, have a place to gather where they can get news and action alerts, commentaries. There's a message board where they can communicate, they can vent, they can say anything they want to pretty much on there within reason, and a bulletin board where you can announce conferences, rallies, important meetings in your community where you'd like people to come and show support or participate. All those things are at freedom21.com, but the important thing is, we realize so many of our organizations in the freedom movement or what I call mom and pop organizations. They're just local folks who've come together to fight something that's happening in their community, and they don't have any funding. They don't have anything, but they take their paychecks on Friday night and cash them, and they go to Kinko's and they make copies of documents or commentaries or whatever to hand out at meetings the next day. This is pretty much how our freedom movement runs. It's a ragtag band of people. Dedicated, smart, they know the issues, but they are up against massive foundations and huge organizations that have billions of dollars to implement these programs, and we don't have anything like that. And I'm frustrated by it. I'm tired of fighting this way, and I know that I've come to the realization there's no big foundations and there's no big money men coming to help us, so we have to do it ourselves. And so This was my plan. I put together freedom21.com, and the idea is that it's a membership of $6.99 a month to be a member and have an email box that says your name at freedom21.com. You get the news, you get the commentaries, you get the action alerts, a place for us to gather and get all the information. But $2 of that $6.99 will go to the freedom organization of your choice.
Hold on, we're going to come back, talk a little bit more about that right after this.
Good.
Welcome back. We're talking to Tom DeWeese from the American Policy Center. You made a comment there just a minute ago about there's no money people coming to the table in this movement. But it affects small business, medium business, entrepreneurs. Why do you think that is?
If I knew how to approach them or knew what would turn their buttons, I'd do it. There's so much apathy, there's so much ignorance, there's so much uh, lack of understanding of people who have, as you say, they have their own businesses. They ought to, understand that this is a threat to them. So many times they don't. And I think the fact that we have so few outlets open to us to get, our message out, they're not hearing it. What they're hearing is this massive force of, the international scene. You've got the Sierra Club, the Nature Conservancy, the Audubon Society, thousands of little local organizations like that that are funded from the top, and they drown us out. We don't have the ability to compete. And so, people aren't hearing our message, and this is where I become frustrated, and this is why I started this, so that we could kind of counter that. If I could get 1 million subscribers to freedom21.com, that would put, with $2 from each member going to the organization of their choice, it would put $24 million a year into the freedom movement. Now, up against $1 billion as a Nature Conservancy, that's not much.
And that's just one group alone.
Yeah, but we have learned to use our resources so much more efficiently than they have, because you become rich, you become a fat cat, and you blow money. But and I've watched them blow some incredible money in some really stupid places. I'm always thrilled to see them do that because I know they're not being effective with their money. But it's just a massive onslaught, and we could, getting on our message on television and so forth would be much more looking like reality if we had that kind of money. And that's what we're working towards.
Well, if you can, why don't you give some examples, and you've been at this a long time, of how business people have been affected by sustainable development policies?
Well, the sustainable development policies cover where they can put their business, what kinds of businesses can be in a community. The public-private partnerships of sustainable development really is a system where a select few businesses are chosen to be part of the good old boy network of sustainable development. And if they don't play the games with the powers that be, and in this case, talk about local communities where you've got city councils and you've got planning boards and all these unelected review boards and so forth that make all these regulations, businesses are being persuaded to accept sustainable development policies and implement them to get into that network. And if they don't get in that network, say a developer who's not playing that game doesn't get to build his homes, one of the big players in the sustainable development public-private partnerships is Walmart.
Hang on right there. We'll talk a little bit more about that after this break. Welcome back. I'm talking to Tom DeWeese from the American Policy Center. Talk about how Walmart benefits from sustainable development policies.
Well, with these public-private partnerships, in a normal free enterprise situation, a private company would, if they wanted to build a store in a community, they would have to find the property and negotiate to buy it. And if it entailed being in a neighborhood where they would have to buy existing homes and so forth to build, then that would cost them money, and it might not be possible to do if the sellers don't want to sell their land. And what Walmart does is they work with the city council, and they get into this whole issue of the what the Kelo ruling was about, the use of eminent domain to take out entire neighborhoods so that they can build their store. They get tax breaks, and they get things they could never do on their own. So they set up a Walmart in town with these massive stores, and the first thing that happens is local businesses, the local hardware store, the local clothing store, people who've been in that community for maybe all their life, suddenly are hurting and maybe have to go out of business. Walmart has now benefited by putting their arm around the local city council and the use of eminent domain. Now, you may say, well, that's not sustainable development. Yes, it is. Those public-private partnerships, the chosen few who are able to do these sorts of things, is exactly what it's all about. Sustainable development isn't about protecting the environment. And anybody who thinks that it is knows nothing about this issue. It is about power. It is about people lining their pockets and implementing policies that that just benefit certain people, and we're all told it's for the public good. Building a Walmart in your town, taking out whole neighborhoods, isn't for the public good. It's for the good of Walmart and a few politicians who are lining their pockets as they do it. That's what this is about, and it's nothing more than that, and it's seedy, and this is why RICO acts were put together. This used to be called extortion and graft, and you have these people acting like Tony Soprano to rule your town, and all of it's done for the common good. And, you know, businesses are dropping like flies in towns under these policies, and other people are getting very, very rich. And what we're doing under sustainable development is we are eliminating the middle class in this country. When the middle class is gone, then you have two choices. The super wealthy, all the people in the partnerships who got the free ride, and the poor. And this is what you have all through Africa and in these third world countries, is you've got the wealthy and the powerful, and you've got the poor. And there is no middle class, there is no protection of private property, and without the middle class, there's no small business. And that really affects employment. That's what makes people poor. There's no employment because there's no middle class. So, you know, that's what's happening here. And most small businesses, small businesses employ most of the people in this country. And if you continue to wipe them out in favor of a select few major corporations, they won't be there, and those corporations aren't going to employ you.
Do you ever have the opportunity to speak to business folks?
Once I did. Last year, last April.
And what was, talk a little bit about that, and what was the outcome?
I was invited to speak to a small gathering of chief financial officers of some major corporations. And when I got the opportunity, they asked me what I wanted to talk about, and first of all, they told me they wanted me to come in as a Washington, D.C. expert and talk about the major issues that would be facing business, of the day. And this was just before the election, so they were kind of thinking I'd get involved in that and so forth, too. I saw this as a major opportunity to get in front of these CFOs of major corporations and talk about the number one issue that faces all of their businesses, and most of them were helping participate in, and that was sustainable development. And I did.
Okay. Well, hang on there just for a second. I do want to finish up with that story, but I do also want to remind people that if they have a question or a comment for you, you can call it 888-245-4237, or, like I said, get on the internet. We don't have stations in every community, but you can get us wherever you are on the internet at freedom21santacruz.net/radio, or for you fancy ones, f21sc.net, and you can plug in, send an email to your friends, because you don't want to miss what Tom DeWeese has to say, because he's one of our main frontline guys trying to preserve and forward freedom for all of us. So we'll be right back. Back, we're talking with Tom DeWeese from the American Policy Center. So you're standing out there in front of a bunch of, business leaders, big-time business leaders here. What was their reaction to what you had to say?
I got about 15 minutes into a planned hour talk, and I wasn't doing what they expected me to do. I wasn't just being jovial and talking about this bill or that bill. The first 15 minutes laid the entire outline of what sustainable development is, Agenda 21 is, and I was just coming around the bend I was holding up Michael Kaufman's map that shows what the nation will look like if all these programs are put in place, and how we herd people out of the wilderness or the less populated areas into major cities, and we have these urban areas in, you know, on the coastlines, and that's about it. And at that point, the guy who was in charge, who was a trained facilitator, interrupted me, and he said, Tom, can't we just talk about some bills here? I said, well, you know, you asked me to talk about the number one issue that is facing every business in this country that would have a major impact on how they operate. This is it. May I continue, please? Well, and he, you know, she wants, can't we just do this? I mean, no, this is what you asked me to talk about, and that's what I'm giving you. Well, we're going to take a 15-minute adjournment here, and he then ushers me into the parking lot and basically says, you're not going to go on with this. And I said, it's what you asked me to do. No, it's not. Yes, it is. And so he, I wouldn't back down. I wouldn't talk about the fluff he wanted me to talk about. And so he wasn't going to let me back in the room. I still had stuff in the room, including my glasses. And I said, you're not going to let me back in the room? And then he let me go back in and pick my stuff up. I walked back up to the podium, and for a minute, I stood there thinking, what would he do if I just started in again? But what I noticed was here were 20 major CFOs from major corporations around the country, powerful people. I mean, every time they had a break, their cell phones were going crazy because they couldn't run their offices without being there. And I thought, these people have just been stopped from hearing a message. Whether they wanted to hear it or not, I don't know what their reaction to it was, but none of them questioned it. They just sat there. The good news was, before I started, I'd passed out some information, including Paul Dreesen's book, which is called Eco-Imperialism, How Sustainable Development is Starving the Third World. That's not the entire title of it, but that's what it says.
Well, this is perfect, because we're going to hold on right there and finish this story right after this break. We're back with Tom DeRees. I could just imagine those guys, you know, there's probably a little squirming going on in that room.
Now, you know, there wasn't.
No,
God. He sat there passively. I did notice two or three people leafing through the book and some of the other materials I'd passed out. So I took some satisfaction in that as I left. Where I was leading, I was laying the groundwork, I was leading to talk to them directly about an issue called corporate social responsibility, mm-hmm. which is sustainable development. Here you have major environmental organizations like the Rainforest Action Network that is laying massive pressure on these corporations to implement these policies, use their profits to do it, and maybe even do things that are against what their whole corporation's about in the first place, and they are being blackmailed into doing this. They don't know why. They don't understand it at all, and I was about to tell them where that was coming from and what it was about and why they should fight back against it, but they weren't allowed to hear that, and these are the places where sustainable development is being implemented through these corporations by this kind of pressure.
Well, you know, maybe we're lucky enough to have one or two or a few of those kind of folks listening in our audience right now. Talk a little bit about this corporate social responsibility.
Well, it's telling corporations that they have a purpose other than producing their product and making money. I happen to believe that that's the only reason that a company's in business. The stockholders have invested money in that corporation in order to make profit from their investments. The employees have come to work there in order to have money to live their lives, to earn money from their paychecks. The products that they produce are there, you know, because people in want them in the marketplace. They are not there to implement a political agenda, you know, to promote issues like global warming and things like this. One of the huge corporations that are falling into this. Today is General Electric. General Electric has now come out and said that they are they're going to push sustainable development philosophically through their financial means. They are now becoming a major force in pushing the idea that global warming is here. Here you are, General Electric. They run advertising on television promoting this program. They are throwing money into environmental groups to push this thing. And we haven't talked about global warming, but I know you've talked about it in previous shows.
Mm-hmm.
There is absolutely no scientific evidence whatsoever to support this. It is a political agenda to redistribute the wealth. And here's General Electric falling right into it, saying, "Oh yeah, we're with it. We're going to push it. We're going to pay the money out to push this issue." And so this is how it works: corporate social responsibility. They make them feel guilty for being in business, make them feel guilty for making profits. And if they don't make a profit, they're out of business. If they're out of business, there are no jobs. The product they're producing does not exist anymore, and above all, the investors who trusted them, who invested their money into them, are out all their money for a political agenda that has no scientific basis in the first place, but it has no business in the corporate world. Corporations are supposed to make money and produce products, and if that sounds alien to you, if your listeners are thinking, "Wow, this guy's really radical," think about it. If you are thinking that, then you have accepted the idea of corporate social responsibility, which is nothing but socialism.
Mm-hmm.
It is about the federal government or other entities controlling a corporation, controlling the marketplace. And now you have corporations that are completely controlled by people who promote these ideas, from the president on down in the corporation. You have these, I guess the term would be globalists, people promoting the sustainable development agenda and so forth. This is their politics, so they're driving the corporation that way. So now you have these partnerships between the corporations and the government to promote these policies. There it is. That's sustainable development. That's Agenda 21.
Well, we have a caller. We have Gloria from Spokane. Good evening, Gloria.
Good evening. Yes, I just wanted to make a comment and see if you were aware of CAFTA's preamble, if you've read it, because CAFTA's preamble from the final text actually promotes sustainable development.
Of course it does.
But, it comes right out and says it. Have you read it?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course it does, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it does that. The CAFTA program is... we have NAFTA and GATT. If we didn't know what these things were going to do to this country, before, we ought to know by now. And CAFTA is no different. It is, again, these public-private partnerships. It's about redistribution of the wealth.
Mm-hmm.
CAFTA is nothing but that. It is to take wealth from this nation and put it into other countries, and it is to... have partnerships with certain corporations, certain kinds of businesses, with government. They'll prosper and move forward. Other ones will lose. And it's the same old story. The pattern is in every level of our lives. And every level of business, every level of government, these things are going on. And CAFTA would be on, obviously on the international level. And one of the big things that CAFTA is calling for and will do, I was talking earlier about Codex and the healthcare industry. This is a major move forward to control the healthcare industry. So CAFTA is bad news all the way around. And here you have, Roy brings me to something I want to talk about anyway. Here you have people you would consider to be conservatives, people who you think would be pro-free enterprise, people that should be in favor of free of limited government, pushing CAFTA as free market. You don't have a free market by putting thousands and thousands of pages of regulations together and say, here's the rules you're going to follow to have a free market. A free market is this company or this individual wants to trade with that individual or company, and you do it. That's free trade. This is not free trade. This is controlled trade from top to bottom. And, you know, one of the things we talked about at the Freedom 21 conference, and Michael Shaw, the head of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, is the man that I look up to on this, who has pounded this into me. I've had to learn it. I come from the conservative movement. That's where I started. That my perspective is that. Michael has been pounding on me because, you know, how do you explain conservatives, people who call themselves conservatives, they call President Bush conservative, people who are supposed to be for limited government, pushing things like CAFTA and sustainable development. Reason is that there is not a left-right perspective here. It is an up-down, liberty or tyranny. And if you stay in this paradigm of this structure of left-right, conservative-liberal, conservatives are supposed to be the good guys, liberals are supposed to be the bad guys who want big government and so forth. And here you have conservatives who are pushing these massive globalist big government policies like sustainable development. How do you explain that? You explain it because very much in that way, that it's not left-right, it is up-down. Either you are for liberty, you are for free enterprise, you are for limited government, you are for individual liberty, or you are for tyranny, and you're for governments controlling every aspect of your lives. It's one or the other. And, you know, we've got to start to change our view of this and how we think about it, or we will continue to be confused by elected representatives who are telling you that things like CAFTA are a good thing. It's not a good thing. It is tyranny, and that's what we have to call it.
And we want to thank Gloria from Spokane for her call. You know, the thing that, you know, Gloria, I think, talked about was, you know, it's right on the paper now. I mean, you know, you go to these websites, their agenda is in clear view.
Yes, it is. They don't hide it. There's no secret conspiracy here. They are very open about what they want. The reason they called it Agenda 21 is in the 21st century. You know, just last month we talked about the mayors that met at a major UN conference in San Francisco. They were given definite guidelines for deadlines that by the year 2010 or by the year 2012, they would begin to implement the sustainable development agenda step by step by step. Water policy, water control on your water, control on energy, and you know, so on and so forth. They have all these different things that they have definite deadlines of when this will be done. There's no secret conspiracy here. They are very, very open about what they're doing, and you know, so read the documents. They're definitely there.
Yeah, we have on the phone Mary Rivera from Arkansas, where FEMA has invaded her state. Good evening, Mary. Tell us a little bit about what's going on.
Well, in Arkansas, we have come upon a situation that FEMA is putting out. It's called the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program, and that, too, is calling for sustainable development. This is a program that is just right off the drawing board, and it's just such a despicable situation. It's a creation of FEMA. However, it is overseen by the State Hazard Mitigation Office. It plans for disaster before it happens. It promotes sustainability, which is really setting aside and acquiring private property.
How did you get involved in this?
Well, I am on a land plan committee. We have followed in the Catron County, New Mexico footsteps and have adopted just recently a county land use plan that complies with NEPA and the Clean Water Act. And because of my involvement in that, our local county government asked our group to be a part of this hazard mitigation group. Now, the people that were invited to is the first meeting and only meeting that we've had that has created a whole ream of paper, basically, which is our county plan so far. It all evolved out of one meeting. It's just amazing how this has come together so quickly. It has been, it was a facilitated meeting. We were supposedly brought to consensus. Everything was just preordained by the Hazard Mitigation Office, I guess.
Tom, this sounds pretty typical.
Yes, it is very typical. Let me give you a few of the little quotes out of this document. First of all, FEMA puts out a set of documents. There are five sections to the document. The first section is just called Getting Started, and it is the part of the program that puts up all the red flags. The rest of the stuff is pretty innocuous, and to be honest with you, our plan looks very simple. It just points out what could happen in a rural area. I happen to live in one of the poorest counties in Arkansas. We have 75 counties, and 60 of those counties have signed up to get into this program. And mine is one of those.
Tom?
The reason that it came together so quickly is because there was all kinds of background work done ahead of time. That whole plan is just repeated like a cookie cutter across the country, and they get all of the major players involved before you ever hear about it. That facilitated meeting was nothing more than an announcement. And,
absolutely.
Your idea.
It wasn't our idea.
But I mean, what they do in the facilitated meetings, consensus meeting, is to get you people in the meeting to believe that it was their idea.
Well,
we're
absolutely
all in this together, you know.
And they make you think that they are going to give you so much, but when you read this document, you find out you're only going to get 5% more than you would have gotten if you hadn't given away all of your rights.
All you're going to get is more control.
Exactly.
That's all they're giving you. With your tax dollars.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And it even admits that a major component of hazard mitigation is sustainable development.
Yeah.
And had I not already read the agenda, the Freedom 21 preparation for public officials on sustainable development, I certainly wouldn't have been as well prepared for this as I am. I only go from documentation, and actually when our local officials asked us to get involved with this, I asked to see the documentation because I wanted to know what it was before I went. It's just amazing how fast it's all come about. Of course, all of the plans for all of the different counties look exactly alike, except for a few different demographics that have been plugged in. So you are absolutely right, Mr. DeWeese. It was all prepared ahead of time.
Oh, sure. That's the way they do it.
Right, right. And they say that they encourage and promote non-hazard-related projects that citizens are dissatisfied with that may be located in a hazard area, such as blight or tourism or economic development. They also play on environmental issues. There are layers of new regulations to be adopted. So it is basically what I call an acquisition and relocation program. They come in and acquire through grants and some public participation, private property that may be located in a flood zone. Now, this flood zone may not have ever flooded, or it may have flooded once in the last 200 years that they can prove. But in rural Arkansas, the little old towns have been built around water supplies.
Of course they were. All towns were.
Exactly.
Everywhere.
So, and of course, for those of us who are farmers, and I happen to be a beef cow farmer, those of us who are farmers, our water supplies in our creeks and such are very important. And one thing that Ray Cuneo just recently pointed out to me, and I confirmed it in my Black's Law Dictionary, that the term structure can even mean a fence.
Yep.
And when you start talking to farmers about taking away their fencing, I guarantee you we get pretty upset because we can't control. We just recently had two of our neighbors' cattle on our property.
Mary, hang on right there. We're going to take a quick break. We'll
sure.
be right back. Welcome back. We're talking with Tom DeWeese from the American Policy Center and a farmer in Arkansas, Mary Rivera. Mary, you said something earlier that caught me. Talk about the granting process and the carrot that they try to pull with that.
Well, they don't even tell you how much in the documentation that I've gotten so far. They don't tell you how much money they're going to give you, and it is doled out by the state as the state sees fit. So even if there is a hazard in your area or a disaster in your area, the money goes to the state, and then the state decides how much money you get. But according to the documentation from FEMA on this, they give you 5% more than you would get if you were not part of the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program. And this is all under, let me see here, I was trying to find the information on that. There is a law that was passed that says all of these things.
How far along are you in your process? Where are you?
Well, actually, we have four of the five sections completed. Well, we don't. The grant writer, who happens to be located in Mississippi, has, and we are not going to be given the fifth document. In fact, in the question and answer section, FEMA has a document that they put out on questions and answers. And one of the questions is, are potential acquisition project property addresses required to be noted in the plan? And the answer to that is no. A list of potential properties or areas that are being considered for acquisition should be prepared in advance as part of the mitigation strategy, but the specifics regarding property addresses should remain at the project level. So they aren't going to
tell you what property they want to take.
I'm sorry?
They don't tell you specifically what properties are in there.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, sure.
So they aren't even going to let our local government know what property they intend to take until they have gotten us signed up to this program.
Tom, what can people do that are in this kind of situation? What can Mary and her neighbors do to fight these guys?
You know, obviously, you know, knowing, and she's got some of the information to know the details and so forth, but here is the key to this. For everybody, do not get involved in negotiations.
We're back. That was a quick impromptu break. Just make sure everybody's awake out there. Go ahead, Tom.
Do not get involved with negotiations with these people. Once you have accepted that there is common ground here to talk about, you just don't like all the details, so you want to try to pull it this way, they've got you. You are now in their process. What you have to do is literally say, no, we will not accept anything along these lines. You have no business being here in our community. We're not taking any money. You know, these are the things you have to do. If you don't do that, if you start to accept certain parts of it, they've got you, you're in the process. Now we're just talking about the details.
That reminds me of a meeting that I was at out here in Corralitos where the community is saying, but they're telling us if we don't do it, they will.
Well, you know, again,
but you can say no.
You yeah, that's right. They just tell you you can't say no. I mean, you just say no to them, and they just get real surly.
Right, they don't know what to do.
But what you know, obviously, to go along with that, I mean, to have the power to say that, you've got to have the people in your community informed and get them to understand what's happening here. But the thing is, that when you a lot of communities have this. People are saying, I don't like this, but they'll get somebody who says, well, look, we can talk to them about this. These are good guys. We can talk to them. No, you can't. You cannot negotiate with them. And the only way that you can win the battle is to absolutely stand up and say no. Not an easy thing to do, absolutely not, but that is the only way you can win.
Well, fortunately, I guess I was fairly well prepared for this ahead of time because I live in what was supposed to be the Ozark Highlands Man and Biosphere a number of years ago.
Oh, that sounds pretty scary.
And it was. And it was the first time I ever became involved in any property rights situation at all. And we went all over the Ozarks, which includes northern Arkansas, north central Arkansas, and southern Missouri. And there were a number of us that went, and we had huge crowds coming to listen to just the documentation. That's all we talked about was the documentation that we had gotten on this thing. And we were able to actually be the first area to put down a man in biosphere. So we have a little bit of fighting experience here.
That's good. That's very good.
And we are at this point negotiating with our land use committee is negotiating with our local government, our county government, to what we're not really negotiating with them. We are trying to get them informed, and we are preparing copies of Understanding Sustainable Development, the Guide for Public Officials, and this first chapter of the Hazard Mitigation Program. And we're highlighting that and sending that to our local officials so that they can see for themselves what we're talking about, because the plan itself is fairly innocuous, like I said.
Always are.
It just doesn't look like any problem at all.
Well, the term sustainable development fits that description. What's wrong with that?
Well, absolutely, yeah.
Mary, do you have the DVD, America's Choice, Liberty or Sustainable Development?
I certainly do.
Okay.
I certainly do, and I am so glad. My husband ordered that for me, actually, and I was so glad that he did. I've gotten, I'm just buried in paperwork and... and all this stuff. I have been a major fighter in our area for, well, ever since 1996, and I'm just, we work against watershed groups, there are just so many things that are trying to overtake us.
All part of it, all of it.
Every bit of it.
Well, I got to jump in here. I want to thank you both for joining us, and please, keep our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Call in. Tom, we'll get a hold of you regularly. But, call us in. Keep us updated because, this is where America is going to make it happen, along with Tom and the American Policy Center and everybody else fighting out there. So thank you for both joining us. We'll be back to talk to a gentleman from Yakima, Washington, right after this.
Views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Or you can go to f21sc.net and click on the radio page and get us on the internet, because we are not in radio stations everywhere out there. And if you want to listen to us, send an email to your friends and let them know where we are. I just again wanted to thank Tom DeWeese and Mary Rivera for their time with us tonight. You can check out some of Tom's stuff at theamericanpolicy.org website if you want to know more. And if you are interested in obtaining a copy of the Understanding Sustainable Development, a guide for public officials as well, check us out on the website. It is at freedom21santacruz.net. We have with us on the line Kathleen Sudan from Montana, and she's going to talk about some water issues in her area. And we're waiting for Jude Doty from Washington to talk about a very, very sad story. But anyway, welcome, Kathleen.
Well, thank you very much.
Tell us about what's happening in Montana.
Oh, I am situated here in Kalispell. We are in the northwest corner of Montana. It is kind of the go-to place now for the pleasantly rich people that come up here, and they basically build a trophy home. A lot of people are moving in, and we have out where I live, which is west of Kalispell, there is a small group of people who have decided that they are anti-growth, because we do have that going on in this area also. They've decided that they are anti-growth, and as a way to stop subdivisions from going in, they have taken 13 sections of land, which is over 7,000 acres of land, and they have decided, 20 people, or 25 people, have decided...
Are those 25 people elected officials?
No, sir. They are people who live in the area. Actually, there are 54 people who signed a petition stating that they allege that there is a water shortage underneath the ground in this 13 section area. They filed a 400-page petition with the state of Montana alleging certain facts that there is a water shortage. Their whole report was basically taken off of the internet, and so now we are embroiled in a huge contentious issue, because we are getting ready to have hearings with the opponents and the proponents. They call it water court. People who say that there is a shortage, who, by the way, in this petition, they have not one single solitary fact showing that there is a water shortage. They have no data. They did no studying. They did no monitoring of wells. They went out one day and measured the static level in 17 wells. There are over 400 wells in the area, and they decided from these water levels that the water table had dropped approximately 6 feet, and that's why they want to shut down the drilling. What happens then, of course, is when, if you want to drill a well, you have to prove to the state and to the other homeowners out there before you drill the well that the water is there. Well, water being under the ground and where it is a God thing.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to find out more about this story right after this.
As a listener of tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show, you have exclusive access to our online audience participation center at freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Here are just some of the value-added features you'll get by logging on while you're tuned in. Get free access to the research and articles that have contributed to tonight's show. See an important multimedia presentation titled The Philosophy of Liberty. Email the host with your comments. Get special discounts on featured books like the ever-popular Pocket Constitution. Register to receive a free subscription to AdvanceBulletin.net, which provides commentary and analysis on a spectrum between liberty and tyranny. So get more. Log on while you're tuned in and advance freedom at freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Policies, procedures, and laws enacted by local government and non-government organizations in the name of diversity, community, and Earth are diminishing individual liberty, degrading ecology, and threatening human life and happiness in towns across the nation. You've likely already experienced some of the consequences of policies that are approaching full implementation, with little public discourse or voter input. Have you experienced any of the following? Restricted freedom of mobility as you sit for hours in gridlock traffic. Mounting limitations on, or even loss of, your private property. An engineered housing crisis that you're being told must be solved with your money by those who caused it. Loss of parental authority to a government education system that seems to emphasize social indoctrination over education. Transitioning of water resources to regional control by non-elected bureaucrats with subsequent engineered shortages. Heavy influence of international and non-government organizations over local policy at the expense of representative democracy. You're not alone in recognizing these and other symptoms of our diminishing freedoms. The adverse consequences of collectivist policies and laws enacted by local government bodies are affecting almost every citizen in your town. Many have noticed and are ready to act to advance individual liberty, family autonomy, a vibrant ecology, and a strong economy. They're doing this by turning their individual initiative into local action for national impact. To find out how you can join others to advance freedom, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. That's freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
Welcome back. We're talking with Kathleen Sudan, who is working with a fake water shortage in Montana. Kathleen, how did you get involved in this?
I do not live in the 13 section area, but I have a friend who was trying to put a subdivision in and had to jump through 14 extra hoops to get this through. This little group of people did everything in the book to stop this, the 20 lot subdivision, to stop the subdivision. When that didn't work, then they decided to go after the water.
When you control the water, you control everything, right?
When you control the water, you control everything. Originally, when they started this, it was to completely shut down the well drilling. When they found out that they were going to be fought because we started getting the word out, see, she would have meetings. The head force started a homeowners association, but it was a very unique association. That if you did not agree with their platform, then you were not invited to their meetings. And we caught wind of what was going on, and we started getting on the phone and letting people know what was going on. In fact, she filed the petition was filed in August of 2004. When we got the word out, we ended up having a public meeting in November out here in this area, and we had over 200 people that attended that meeting. I would say 99% of them were very, very upset that their property rights were being taken away, and they would not have even known if we had not told them that this particular petition was even out there. It's done in the guise of, we are protecting your property rights by taking away your rights to drill a well.
Where are you in the process?
Where are we? We have just received from the state the scheduling procedure, because this is just like I say, it's water court. We have just received the schedule. We were supposed to have everything done by the end of October, meaning that the whole process would be over and our water court would be over. Once the opponents who have hired, we have four different lawyers that are helping us fight this, a hydrogeologist and everything. Now it's not, the court part of it is not even going to be until April of 06. So we've got a big fight on our shoulders. It's interesting that the people that have signed on to take away our property rights in the guise of protecting them, basically to take away the drilling, they want the state to pay for everything, and yet we are being forced, since we're having to prove a negative. They have proven nothing, so we have to prove that they proved nothing. If you understand what
sure,
I'm saying?
Sure. They just throw it out there, and you have to prove that you're right.
Right. That's exactly right. Yes. I call it, they've made an alleged, and now we're searching for facts.
So who's helping you?
Who is helping me? Well, I started Property Rights at Risk, and Property Rights at Risk not right now is myself and probably one other person.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lawyer who happens to be a personal friend, so he's putting in a lot of extra time. I've been really lucky that when we've had public meetings and this kind of a deal, we've asked to raise money, and I've been able to raise, in one night, in fact, I raised just a little over $1,000. This is just from the people that live here in the valley, in the area, who are so upset about and trying to get this stopped. I've had to hire a hydrogeologist that is going to, his bill for me is going to be $10,000. And here the opponents who have done nothing in their study have spent no money except the money they have had to spend to file the petition. Now they did receive a bill for all of the expenses that Department of Natural Resources is going to do as far as mailings and all of this kind of thing, and they refused to pay it.
What other, do they have any other agencies that are helping them?
We have a group in the Flathead Valley that is called Citizens for a Better Flathead, who they are funded by the Ted Turners of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And Citizens for a Better Flathead has a very bad name in the valley now. So what they do now is they go into these little areas and they whisper in someone's ear and help them out a little bit. And then if things go wrong, then the individual that they were whispering to is left out there hanging, and Citizens doesn't end up with a black eye.
Well, we want to thank you for. Is there anything else you want to leave us with? Because
that's it. I just appreciate you all listening to me.
Well, we appreciate you calling in, and you know, jot down the website freedom21santacruz.net. There's a lot of tools on there that can help you on what to watch out for as this process goes along.
Right, because this is all Agenda 21.
Exactly.
That's exactly what it is. Well, I appreciate your time.
And keep our number, you know, call us in, let us know what's going on. I wish we would have still had Tom DeWeese on the phone, because he could have gave you some really good tips.
Well, I appreciate your time, and I will look at your website and see what I can find on it.
Before you go away, there's a caller who wants to know, who put up the petition first?
The Batavia Keynes Homeowners Association.
Yeah, we've heard those homeowners associations can be as evil as some of those big environmental groups. So keep up the good fight. Keep in touch with us.
Okay.
And thank you for being with us.
Thank you now.
Okay. Now we're going to go to Jude Doty from Yakima, Washington. Jude, you on the phone?
Yeah.
How are you doing this evening?
Yes, fine.
Fine, considering.
Yeah, after losing most everything, yes.
Tell us a little bit about your story.
Well, I was actually on your program back in, I think it was in February of this year, but the state claimed that I had employed my two older boys, then 11 and 13, in a family business without a permit from the state labor and industry, and I was getting fines around $7,000 per day. I got over $100,000 worth of fines. Now, this is all in the administrative level. Never yet have I seen a county superior court judge, but we're at that point very soon. But just in the administrative level then, which has been 30 months going on right now, They have literally liquidated everything that I own. They have seized properties and tried to seize all the equipment, even though I hid most of it away. I kept most of my equipment. But the state has already identified what employment is within the family circle. And our state Supreme Court has already said three times that they will never recognize employment within the family unless the children are emancipated with a written contract, fixed compensation, and the liberty to spend the money without any parental control. In fact, the last time it was tested, it was here in Yakima. And it was with an 18-year-old, not a 13-year-old. And the 18-year-old was paid full man's wages and driving truck interstate for a family business. And yet the state, the county superior court and the high court agreed that it was not employment. They did not want to, mess with the family rights to work, you know, in family relations. So, but here I got 11, 13-year-olds that are helping in a family business. And here the state, in fact, there are examples that if you allow your child to carry in a mail parcel, that you have employed them.
Now,
that
for,
can get
for,
you.
For our listeners and for those of us who didn't have the benefit of hearing you when you were with us in February, tell us how this all started.
Wow.
Because many of us, I mean, including myself, grew up going to work with my dad, whether he worked in a construction company or we had a little family restaurant and I bused tables and everything seemed to be fine. What happened in your case?
And, you know, I'll say a little other than that, not just how it started with me, the fact that it is happening with hundreds of people every year in my same situation. In fact, in the last week, I've learned of three I've been acquainted with three other pastors that were home business and homeschooled and that were cited by labor and industry for employing their own children. But as most every other youth has found employment by the age of 10 or 12, we all find opportunities for our youth to work. In fact, every labor and industry employee that we have deposed has acknowledged that they were employed before the age of 12. In fact, one of them said he was employed with an outside job by the age of 6. So it's not an unusual thing, the idea of apprenticing your children to work at the age of 10 and 12 is nothing new. It's been going on for centuries. But now the state says that you do not have the right to train your children to work. In fact, their own court briefs acknowledged that a parent cannot train a child to work, but the school district can. They went so far that the parent can train a child to work, but they cannot receive any appreciable service while the child is being trained. So if you teach a child how to build a doghouse when you're done in the family, you've got to destroy that doghouse when you're finished. There can't be any appreciable work, you know, from the training process.
Well, as usual, truth is stranger than fiction. So anyway, you're going about your life and your kids are working with you. How did this government agency get involved with you?
You know, initially, I think what the catalyst that drove this whole thing was I had trouble with the city of Yakima. And we have not exposed that story an awful lot, but the city of Yakima was trying to stop me and had, for a few months, had done all their effort, all within their grasp, to knock me off my feet. And to this day, I'm not sure what the catalyst, what was driving them. But they had incited labor and industry with literally dozens of, maybe even, I should say, over 100 phone calls, encouraging labor and industry and CPS and DOE and many other agencies, Clean Air Authority, to shut me down. So I could think the city of Yakima was actually the catalyst that started them. But and in fact, my children were not working with me full time, as often the case, probably one if not 2 days a week, and then not full time. They often just being with their father.
Right.
So
somebody just showed up on your door one day and said, "Hey, we're going to court with you."
And that was in January of 2003 when I first was contacted by labor and industry, their child protective services, threatening me to keep my children away from a work site. And now this work site was my own property. So of these citations, over $100,000 of fines, all but a few of them, over 90% of them were cited for working with my own boys on my own property.
And you mentioned labor and industry. Is this a county, state agency?
A state agency here in Washington State that regulate all employment. safety standards. You know, the as I told you, the state has already defined what is employment. So supposedly, the labor industry should recognize that these children of mine are not employees, if they would recognize what the courts have already said. There has, in virtually all the states, and even in the federal level, there is already exemptions to all parent-child employment. It is in the federal, there is the Child Labor Act of 1938, And since then, many states have had legislation on child labor laws, but all of them exempt parent-child relationships, and this state just doesn't want to recognize that. So this is not employment, per se, as far as it should be recognized. It is just not employment.
So what are they saying about coming after you for so long, for so hard, if the statutes are already there?
They won't even recognize them. In fact, that's what I want to make a case out of now very clear. We need to take this to get more on the offensive instead of we've been on the defensive here for 30 months and claim that the state officials are actually in contempt, I believe, now, of these Supreme Court rulings. We have three of them in our state of Washington identifying what is employment between a parent and their child. And we are very clearly in the right. They have all given a four-point test whether the child is emancipated, whether there's a written contract, fixed compensation within the contract, and the liberty to spend the money within the contract. And now we have state officials that are snubbing their nose at these Supreme Court rulings. The Supreme Court rulings have identified employment, and they say they will apply unless other statutory law supersedes them. And in our state, there is no other statutory law that has identified what is employment between a parent and child. So when they give their ruling, they say, we now hold the law of this state is, and they identify what is the law of the state in reference to the relationship between employment between a parent and child. And here we got these state legislators, these state administrators that are just employees within the state that are just simply snubbing, defying, standing in contempt, I believe, what the courts have already said.
Now tell us about your situation prior to this. You were a homeowner, you're a business owner. What have they done to you?
Well, they have liquidated. We've lost all of our properties. There is a few of them yet right now that may be kept. At the time when this thing was coming down, I had around 21 properties, I believe, at that time. But they seized my banks, they seized over $100,000 of cash bonds that I had posted in different departments. I was in house moving and building moving.
Mm-hmm.
So I had posted sizable bonds. Oftentimes I put up a $10,000 bond for each building I move. And there was there was about eight of them out there at that time. So they seized over $100,000 for the bonds.
And they
put me out of work.
And they sold your property.
What happened then, in reference to the properties, they leaned all the properties. They leaned all my bonds. I could not work. I could not sell anything. When I move a house, set it on a lot, and set it down and sell it, that's how I make my return. So I was financially shipwrecked within a few months when I could not sell a thing. They actually stopped over $800,000 worth of property sales that they stood in the way of, and I could not sell. And when I cannot sell a property after I move a house onto it, it's just a matter of months, and I'm starting to lose everything. And it was just domino effect. Within a year, then I had lost everything.
So how were they able to stop you from conducting your business?
Primarily, then, with those liens on the property that I could not sell a thing. I could not sell a property. They would not release the liens. And then when they seized all of my bonds that allowed me to work here within the state of Washington, my contractor's license was not effective. I could not work. I could not move anymore. It's been now 24 months since I have moved a building here in the state of Washington. And I was the largest house mover in central Washington for a matter of a few years. I was moving over about some 30 buildings a year. But and now all this has happened again on the administrative level. No judge has ever heard this story yet.
No? You haven't been in court? This has just been with bureaucrats?
That's all. Just administrative hearing boards.
Oh, my.
Yeah. The last hearing we had a few months ago, they threw out over $100,000 of the fines in the administrative hearing board again, but yet the department is appealing that, and now there's another 6 months to wait and see what the next level does with it.
Now this,
so they can tie you. It's been 30 months for us, and some of it is through the court, the administrative process, and part of it is not.
Now, the administrative process is involved in what bureaucracy? That same business?
Labor and industry.
Labor and industry.
And there's kind of two different citations in this. At one point, I got $30,000, $34,000 of fines for employing my children without permits to employ. And then they gave me over $107,000 of fines for not paying insurance benefits on my children as employees. Now, the $107,000 was thrown out by one of their hearing boards a couple months ago, but they're appealing that to another board. The $34,000 of fines is finally now into the County Superior Court, and I believe within a couple weeks we're going to be able to argue that here in the County Superior Court. We're claiming that the Department of Labor and Industry were never authorized to redefine the term to employ. And when they redefined that term to employ, they made it very broad, and they said that if you ever allow or permit your children to do any appreciable work, they actually said work, but then they defined work as just simply anything appreciable. So if you allow your minor children or anyone to do any appreciable work, then you have employed. And there has never been any mandate. They never had any authorization to redefine the term to employ. So we think their statutory, it's just a code, administrative code is wrong. Now, we're not in trouble with any statutory law or any case law. they're only faulting us on violating their administrative code policy.
Wow. And you say you're not the only one who they're going after?
No, this happens. I believe it's about 100 a year that gets in trouble with child labor standards parents with their own businesses. I may be very wrong. That number may be a lot. I only can confirm right now about that number. I do know labor and industry in the state of Washington does over 9,900 citations per year in the state of Washington. They do almost 10,000, not quite. And out of them, 10,000, only 16 ever get into a county superior court. So your chances, you hear that, only 16 out of 10,000 ever make it into a court. They will destroy you in the process, because in that process, they can liquidate everything you got. Seize and sell, and you can lose everything, and they can keep you there for 2 or 3 years. They can keep you there indefinitely. I was there once before for 4.5 years in the same process, and I never made it to the County Superior Court, and I lost when I missed one deadline date.
How do they prevent you from going to court?
I have 3 times tried to get to the County Superior Court with hearings. We went into the court, asked to circumvent all the administrative process, and they just say that you must go through it. Try all your remedy in the administrative process. They just force you right back into that. I was never allowed to stay in the county superior courts. As I say, we are there now with part of it, with the $34,000 of fines, the idea of identifying employment within the family. We're there now after 30 months. We're there.
And when they liquidate you and fine you and all those kinds of things, where does the money go?
Wow. You know, they have tied up an awful lot of property. There's a lot of it, really, I guess, they haven't made a lot of money off me so far. Now, they've seized a lot of bonds. They're holding over $100,000 of my cash bonds. They've actually made me lose over $1 million of property. It's not that they have made a lot of money off me. They've cost a lot of loss.
Hmm.
When they seize your bank accounts and your bonds and your ability to continue business, they just simply annihilate you financially.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk with Jude Doty from Yakima, Washington. And if you'd like to join us in a conversation, we're at 888-245-4237, or you can check us out on the internet at freedom21santacruz.net. We'll be right back.
21 wondering if Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is a liberal or a conservative organization. Are they left or right, Republican or Democrat? But you'll find that none of these one-dimensional labels applies to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, nor to many of its participants. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz dialogue doesn't take place in a left-right, liberal-conservative dialectic, but on a spectrum between liberty and tyranny. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. Constitutional Republic. To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. Policies, procedures, and laws enacted by local government and non-government organizations in the name of diversity, community, and earth are diminishing individual liberty, degrading ecology, and threatening human life and happiness in towns across the nation. You've likely already experienced some of the consequences of policies that are approaching full implementation, with little public discourse or voter input. Have you experienced any of the following? Restricted freedom of mobility as you sit for hours in gridlock traffic. Mounting limitations on, or even loss of, your private property. An engineered housing crisis that you're being told must be solved with your money by those who caused it. Loss of parental authority to a government education system that seems to emphasize social indoctrination over education. Transitioning of water resources to regional control by non-elected bureaucrats with subsequent engineered shortages. Heavy influence of international and non-government organizations over local policy, at the expense of representative democracy. You're not alone in recognizing these and other symptoms of our diminishing freedoms. The adverse consequences of collectivist policies and laws enacted by local government bodies are affecting almost every citizen in your town. Many have noticed and are ready to act to advance individual liberty, family autonomy, a vibrant ecology, and a strong economy. They're doing this by turning their individual initiative into local action for national impact. To find out how you can join others to advance freedom, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. That's freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
Welcome back. We're talking with G. Doty from Yakima, Washington, on his just, you know, one of those stranger than fiction type stories. G., tell me a bit about yourself and your family.
We were a conservative family. Naturally, we homeschooled. In fact, we homebirthed. We pretty conservative as far as our faith, a strong faith in the Lord, which keeps our families strong. I don't know if they exactly singled us out for that. We do have one person in labor and industry that says we were particularly singled out because of our Christian faith. A lot of the fight from the city of Yakima, in fact, came directly within a couple days after we made a strong statement of our faith in a local newspaper. And I was told very clearly by people in labor and industry that a number of people seen that statement of faith of ours and was offended with that. You know, I think a lot of their agenda is simply anti-family. And the idea of parents working with children builds strong families. Many times they are coming from the pretense that they're looking for the safety of the youth. But their policies are definitely against anti-safety. Every year there are about 50 children killed at the workplace in the U.S. From 12 to 17. There's about 50, 51 maybe. In the average year. But there are over 10,000 a year killed in other playing around activities, sporting activities. Over 200 times more children are killed in playing than at work. And they know the risk of work is the safest exposure that a child can have. In fact, if you compare the risk to a 15-year-old at work, he is 34 times greater at risk if he's riding with his mother and dad in the car than being at a work site. Their own studies say that the safest place for youth is at work. and yet they're intentionally driving youth to work, so they're intentionally, you know, putting youth at a higher risk. We've got reports that show that their own studies make it really clear. Youth are at 80 times greater risk if they're swimming than at work. They're 20 times greater risk if they're riding a bicycle than at work. So they know work is safe for youth, and yet they lie to the public and to our legislators, claiming that they're out there to save youth, and they have reduced workplace life, the workplace deaths for youth. But in doing so, I believe they've destroyed the family, greatly destroyed the home, and driven the accidental work, the accidental deaths up probably tenfold. So my statement would be, it would be better for America if there were 200 to 300 children dead a year in the workplace. And then you would probably reduce the accidental deaths down to, instead of 10,000 a year, down to maybe 1,000 a year. Because they know anything away from work, usually the exposures are somewhere 40 to 60 times greater away from work. And they know that. Their own studies point that out.
Now, in some of the material that I've read from you, you know, it says that, you know, many of the public schools offer work programs. What's the difference between your program and a school program?
And they acknowledge you can be 9 years old and flag traffic at the public school crossings without any adult supervision. And they say that is not employment nor an unreasonable risk. But for me, when my 13-year-old does it with a father and with city police escorts along with me on a house move, they claim that is employment and it is an unreasonable risk. You can be at any age in the state of Washington, and you can drive even heavy truck equipment on the road if you're a farmer, a child of a farmer. But and there again, they claim that it's not employment, nor it's unreasonable risk. And yet for me, they claim, in fact, they are claiming that it's an employment for myself if I allow them to carry in the mail. Their own court briefs went so far as claiming that if you allow your child to retrieve a hammer, that was employment. And they say any employment, in reference to myself, they always refer to it as putting children at serious at serious risk and an unreasonable risk. And yet we know driving youth from, you know, when they drive youth from working with their parents, by default, they're often running then with other peers. And that is often increasing the risk, as I say, over 40 to 60 times greater than working with their own parents.
What was some of the kind of work that your kids were doing?
You know, at 11 and 13, which they were at them years, they often don't do a lot. They're often with their fathers at the different work settings. Now, they did see, and they have photos, and we acknowledge that, they have photos of my children being actually on the roof of a house going down the road. Now, when you move a house down the street, you're going usually about 5 or 6 miles an hour moving a house. And we always had line crews that would pick up electric lines. They do have, and we often did, allow my children to pick up a telephone or a cable line. And yet, as I say, let me point out, the risk of children working with parents is not near as much as other sporting activities. You know, some years, there's been over 50 in a single year killed in football. In a single year.
I was thinking of, you know, your kids sitting on the top of houses much slower than riding down the hill on a skateboard.
Oh, yes, yes. And there again, there's hundreds a year in skateboards. It's taken out literally hundreds a year. So, you know, every parent has allowed their 10 and 15-year-old to do what the 50-year-old parent could not do. In fact, my own attorney said, when I was a little guy, I used to run up on top of a 30-foot drilling rig and change or grease the bearings up on top when Dad couldn't do that. And that's always been the case. Youth, when they're young and agile, they're much more safe. In fact, their own studies make it really clear that a 15-year-old on the farm is 17 times, a 40-year-old is 17 times greater risk than a 15-year-old per hour at farm labor. Now, their own studies, we got U.S. Department of Labor studies that point that out very clearly. They give the risk per million hours of exposure to farm labor, and a 40-year-old is 17 times a greater risk than a 15-year-old at farm labor. So, 15-year-olds and 14-year-olds and 10-year-olds are very agile on their feet. Even if they do fall, they bounce back. So, but what they're out to do, they're out to destroy the family and the father that is leading the home. And so when they drive youth from working with their parents, they're driving them into other alternate activities that are much more at risk. In fact, in our own city here in Yakima, we had an example where a father was in trouble for allowing his, I forget, 13 or 14 year old to work with him. In fact, the youngster, they faulted the parents on allowing them to carry in the mail even. And, you know, the father quit having his boy with them at his work. The father was also doing property development, just often being with them. And the child started running with other peers. Within a year, the boy was dead in an accidental, maybe not even accidental, playing Russian roulette with his friends.
Oh, that's sad.
But I think much of the death in youth is a result of separating the youth from their parents.
Well, if you're not attending the government school, they're probably looking at you, too.
No doubt. We was on their list just for that cause alone, yes. And there again, they want to be the ones training them in the workplace. They acknowledge that in their own court, in their own depositions, that parents, they claim homeschooling parents were not bona fide, the word they used, bona fide, to give vocational instruction to their own children. Now, they have that in this. The senior official in the labor industry says that. So we can see what their agenda is.
So what are the next steps for you?
Well, we need to survive this thing out, and their agenda is that we do not survive it. In fact, you know, we just recently got some of their, in more requests for records, we found their in-house communications said that their agenda was to drive Dodies out of the state, out of their home, and out of business. And they're making that comment to the local city of Yakima. The city of Yakima actually congratulates them on succeeding in that effort. But my, place here is to last, is to hold out, and to not be destroyed in the process. So God has taken care of many of our needs. We're living on, we're literally on a few hundred dollars a month, or less than that, I should say, up here in northern Idaho, in a borrowed farm on 13 acres. So the Lord has been good to us, taking care of our needs, and we just need to wait this thing out until we can get before a jury in the County Superior Court here in Yakima and have a jury, see the story.
Why do you think it's important for people to know about your story?
My, they're affecting not just us, I just say hundreds of other families a year. It may well be thousands. In fact, just last week, I realized that there is a big concerted effort by a few agencies across the country, it wasn't in Washington State, in other states I realized it on the internet, that are out to change and to take away the parent-child exemptions to the child labor laws. If they can remove them, right now they are prosecuting hundreds of parents a year, even though them parent-child exemptions are in place. Most parents never find them. They're kind of hard to locate, even though they're on the statute, they're on the laws in almost every state, and in the federal level they're on the law books, and in the case law also they're there. But they're already there. They would like to remove them, but the end result is just destroying the foundation of the family. Children should be needed. They need to be needed in the family, and if they're not needed, it's going to hurt their own esteem. Their own studies make it real clear that work for a youth increases their grades. It decreases the risk of crime. Their own studies say that they do not identify any negative effect from youth at work. In fact, one study we found from the U.S. Department of Labor said the only negative thing they could find in reference to youth at work is that work is denied many youth. It actually came out and said that. The only negative effect they could find is the fact that it is not available to many youth. But it actually increases the grades. It decreases the risk to smoking and drinking and all the negative habits. Work is good for youth. It's good for the home.
Well, I think the government just wants the youth to have certain kinds of work.
And they want to control that. The idea of, school to work, they want to be the ones in charge of that. They want that to happen from their own government schools. They don't want us parents involved in that whatsoever. I was going to hope that the conservative, even Christian community around the country would wake up and recognize this thing as a group and stand against it, because I know they're hanging them one at a time across the country. Because it's happened to me, and we have resisted it, we are going to last, we're going to continue by God's grace. I don't want to stand there and be the old and let it go on, continue to hurt and ruin many other families. And even them, they do not prosecute. They're already destroying them in many degrees because they're putting fear in the minds of the parents, and they're afraid to have their youth with them while they're at work or at any kind of near work setting. So they're leaving their youth behind. They're a catalyst for separating the home. These policies are anti-home, absolutely. They're evil. They're just destructive to the family unit.
Yeah, and I think, Christian, non-Christian, it's happening to many families.
Yes. And, the foundation of any country, we know that would be the home, the family unit. So,
We have a caller from Jack from Michigan. Jack, you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Thank you for the program.
You're welcome.
Jude should know that there is a Christian group and organization that are intimately familiar with the peril that has come upon Jude, and it has to do with some very insidious technicalities that, if I can ask Jude if he understands anything about what's called venue and jurisdiction, and see, we're under commercial law, and when you see your name on any of this official paperwork, your name will either be in all caps or some abbreviated form of your Christian appellation. So what they've done, the government has created a separate, distinct corporate identity that attaches to the live flesh and blood natural man, so that we then become, in essence, what's a fiduciary agent for this corporate entity, our name in all caps. Now, the presumption is that the process by which this all occurred with our informed consent approval. And there are four legally binding elements of a valid, what they call commercial nexus agreement or contract. And I can tell you straight off, none of these, not the birth certificate, not your business license, driver's license, none of them have met those four legally binding criteria of a valid commercial nexus agreement.
They call them adhesive agreements sometimes. Is that the term I'm hearing sometimes?
Yeah, adhesion contract is the constructive trust process, okay? And that occurs whenever we record our property deed, and there is no law that requires that. And that's because the register of deeds at the county was meant exclusively for government purchases of private property based on valuable consideration, full disclosure, clean hands, and good faith. But, Jude, these folks, I'm just a very thankful and learned student. The fellows from whom I have learned this would be more than happy to assist you any way possible, because I can guarantee you the bar attorneys are not going to go into this subject matter to the degree that would derail this whole process.
I hear you there. There again, I need to mention in my website, familiesthatwork.org, and we have contact on that, Jude Doty at Gmail, or even Jude Doty at Yahoo. People can email me, and we're using now primarily Jude Doty at gmail.com. Go to familiesthatwork.org. I would love your input, any help or direction you can give me. We want to last this thing out and survive it to the end. I would like to reverse this whole thing that's happening, and I realize that the same attack is not just on me. It's no doubt on hundreds of other families the same way.
Jude, it's on anyone who's a property owner or a family. Let me give you their website, okay, Jude? Here's their website. It's peoples-rights, R-I-G-H-T-S, peoples-rights.com.
Okay.
And Dave would be more than happy to confer with you. And I'm putting together a seminar.
Well, thanks a lot, Jack. We appreciate the call.
Okay, you're welcome.
Yeah, but you know, it all comes back to the whole individual rights, you know, your property rights for you to be able to do what you want to do on your own property is really, I think, what it all comes down to.
Yes, and you know, the thing that's most amazing, though, how these officials, these public servants, can be so bold.
Public servants. bureaucrats.
We give lip service, but I don't think it means that that way anymore, does it? I think we just pay lip service as if they are public servants. They're acting like lords anymore.
That's right. They want to be the elite, and that's how they act. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll come right back right after this. Welcome back. We're talking with Jude Doty out of Yakima, Washington, who's, you know, had his business stolen and his property stolen and his ability to take care of his family taken away by the bureaucrats. Hasn't even been to court, and you have non-elected government officials making decisions about your life.
Do you know, and what I will, at the closing end, maybe what I'll mention is the fact that how the Lord has even kept us this far through this whole thing after 30 months, and we're still eating and not going without and not being deprived, and how the Lord is faithful. I want to give credit to God that has kept us through this whole process, and wow. My hope and prayer is that families across the nation would be strong and stand up to these individuals and not let them be walked over and stand in the face of them and hope. I think there's a, you know, the whole thing of the internet is just a wake-up call. The information revolution that's happening right now, hopefully some Americans will stand up, and we see a lot of this, what's been exposed on your own radio station. I am encouraged to see that, and wow, we're just sorry to see many other families walked over, and I hope this will serve as a wake-up call to many other families and fathers.
Well, we hope so too, and you know, for people who want more information, because you know there's a lot of information, and I know that Michael Shaw and the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz people and the Freedom 21 folks have worked really hard to try to sift through all of the propaganda and the, you know, because those folks are, you know, highly financed. They have a great propaganda machine, but you know, Freedom21SantaCruz.net is a great place. To just get the synthesized information on what's really going down. And it's all about sustainable development, and it's all about, you know, school to work and public-private partnerships, and, you know, and that's what happens to people like you. When their agenda moves forward, they just steamroll right over you.
Okay, I don't know how I could add to this thing over your. I would appreciate any, if there's any even support. I know last time some people sent us some gifts, and we have surely appreciated that. And I have spent over $50,000, right at $50,000 on legal fees so far. And we fortunately have got an attorney that's going to stay with us till the end. He may or may not be out of the little box. Sometimes I don't know exactly where they're coming from. You know, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah, sure.
But hopefully we'll last this thing out and see a victory down the road.
Okay, we're going to take another break. We'll come back and wrap it all up. If you have a comment or a question, we're at 1-888-245-4237. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're talking with Jude Doty from Yakima, Washington, about his story. How are your kids doing? How's the family?
Fine. They're all staying together. You know, I no doubt going through the kind of a testing like this that we've been through now for these 2 years, even when you got police coming to your house and with, you know, armed, you know, officers, you know, telling you have to be out now, that is kind of a wake-up call to any one of us. That's kind of a... that brings things back to home, and when you're living out on the street virtually or in an RV for months... It's a wake up. I mean, we had a beautiful, nice, you know, 5,000 square foot home. The Lord had blessed us with a lot of success in our business. There are many good opportunities that come our way.
And the police actually came to your house and threw you out.
Oh yes. So it was maybe a little bit of a shock. It's, as I say, it's a wake up. I mean, you don't have none of your finances in the bank. You can't even work and make a living anymore. you can't be permitted to do any jobs in the city or the state, for that matter. So we had no way to get revenue. It's it brought us to our knees. It hasn't hurt us as far as emotionally. We've been able to trust in the Lord. It's brought us tighter, probably.
Well, it sounds like one of those deals that happened in communist countries.
Yes, no doubt. No doubt. It's virtually the same thing. Yes. In fact, the department actually leaned another man the $107,000 fine when they heard that another man was giving me money kind of under the table, helping me exist. The Department of Labor actually served the $107,000 assessment that was on me at one point. It's still on me. Well, we lose on this last court, but now they're appealing that. They actually served this on an 80-year-old man here in the city that was kind of under the table keeping me alive.
And the justification for that was that he was helping you?
Yes. They served him very legally. Actually served it. This is a millionaire, a very wealthy man, and he had the means to keep me eating and above keep my utilities turned on. And
it's his own money. He should be free to do what he wants.
Right, and they actually leaned him. I need to get that lien. I have it available. I have copies of it. Maybe I need to put it up on my website so people could actually see that. But they will attack individuals who are trying to help them, who are trying to survive. That's all he was doing, is trying to help me under the table. Which is right, which is, ethical, and, we all have done that before, helping people who are being destroyed.
Oh, sure. And he earned his money. It's his own money. He should be able to do what he wants with it.
Yeah. So, they can be pretty mean. And that's exactly what happened in many communist countries. They threw fathers in jail, and then if you were caught helping the wives of the children, they would jail you, too. So, they're not beyond that here in America.
Wow. I tell you, I'm listening to you, and I just keep shaking my head that it's unbelievable that in the United States of America this is happening.
But I'm sorry to say, I believe it happens much more than we think. And we know one thing that happens every day, and there's pressure on the fathers and the homes to keep their children away from them because of the threat from labor officials. And that's the thing that's just hideous. I hate it. It's destructive to the home. It's separating the fathers and sons. Fathers need to be with their sons.
Yeah, I think if you look into that whole Agenda 21 thing, there's a lot of information on there on how they want to, have the kids learn what the government wants them to learn, not what parents want them to learn. And it's about educating them to, learn all the sustainable development information as opposed to things like the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and, all that kind of thing. So, anyway,
So we just encourage people to visit our website, to keep in touch with us to some degree, and this may be, it may go on for another, 6 months or a year. I keep thinking it's going to come to an end someday. Now in December we will get a hearing, we will get the answer from the last appeal at that last board in the labor industry. Then after that we can go into the County Superior Court. But we just need the last.
Okay, well I've been corrected. It's the Declaration of Independence. That's what we're all about. So anyway, thank you for being with us, and we'll talk to you soon, and thank you for listening to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio. Remember, check us out on the web, freedom21santacruz.net. There's a bunch of great tools on there. Check it out. Do your best, and we'll see you next time.